KSIV now presents Encounter, a public service program of Bot Radio Network, dedicated to keeping you informed about the issues that affect your life. Now, here's today's Encounter broadcast.
Cancel culture and the new censorship. What do you think about it? What do you know about it? Today, my guest is Alan Dershowitz, and he is one of the most celebrated lawyers in the world. He was the youngest full professor in Harvard Law School history. He has so many names acclaimed his reputation of how he's gotten involved in cases throughout the United States. Also, his many books that he has written. And today, we're going to talk about two of them. One is called Case Against the New Censorship, Protecting Free Speech from Big Tech, Progressives, and Universities. And the other is Cancel Culture. Welcome to Encounter. I'm Judy Redlick. Alan, thank you for joining me today. And where do we start? You know, you say new censorship. What do you mean by that? And haven't there always been challenges of freedom of speech throughout history?
This is completely different. I grew up during the age of McCarthyism. For the first 50 years of my career, I fought against governmental censorship. They try to censor the movie I Am Curious Yellow, the play Hair, the Pentagon Papers, you name it. And I was involved in all of those lawsuits, and we won virtually every one of them because we had the First Amendment on our side. The First Amendment prevents the government from censoring. And when the government censors, we win because it's unconstitutional. But when private institutions like big tech, universities, and individual progressive censor, they have the First Amendment on their side. So this is a new form of censorship. Censorship by private individuals, private institutions, much more invidious, much more insidious, much harder to fight against. And that's why I had to write this book, to expose this new form of censorship. It's not like when the government censors. This is very different, much harder to combat. And we can't win in the courts of law. We have to win in other institutions.
Now, McCarthyism, give people a little thumbnail about that and why that was so much different than today in how it was fought against.
Well, it was headed by Senator McCarthy and other members of the Senate and Congress, and they would haul people in front of federal governmental investigating committees, and they would question them about their history, whether they had been supportive of the Communist Party or other left-wing groups. And then they would issue blacklists and red channels and try to censor. When I was a student government president at Brooklyn College, which was a public university subject to the First Amendment, the president of the university tried to censor professors, tried to fire them, tried to prevent speakers from speaking. And as student government president, I was fighting against it. And we had the First Amendment on our side. We took the cases to the Supreme Court, and we won. That was the point. The point is, it was governmental censorship. McCarthyism was primarily governmental. They did use TV channels. They did use the movie industry, but it was the government that was behind it. Today, the government is not behind censorship for the most part.
Now, why is that?
The private media.
Why is that?
Well, I think we have the woke generation. We have the millennials. They believe they know the truth, with a capital T. They believe they know that when any policeman shoots a black person, of course the policeman is guilty. What do we need a trial? What do we need dissenting opinions? We know, they know, that anytime a woman accuses a man, the woman's telling the truth. The man is lying. The man is guilty. The woman is innocent. Why do we need a trial? They know that the election was fair, and there can be no disputes about it, or vaccines are good. Look, I happen to agree with a lot of their points of view on the merits, but I believe in free speech and dissent. I want people to have their views expressed, even if they disagree with them. I'll give you an example. Former Attorney General Robert Kennedy's son, Bobby Kennedy Jr., is skeptical about vaccines, so he challenged me to a debate on vaccines. We had an hour-long debate. I thought I did a good job persuading people to follow the science. He did a good job raising questions about the vaccine. And people listened and watched the debate. Thousands of people watched it, and then YouTube took it down. They decided only my side of the debate should be heard, not his. Well, I don't want that. I don't want to win the debate by default. I want people to make up their mind based on the merits of the argument.
So here we are with censorship in schools and universities. We have people wanting to change what is written in the history books that our students learn. Censorship, well, we'll hold off on social media a little bit, but you want to comment about those two things and what can we do about it if this is all privatized rather than going according to the Constitution?
And that creates a real problem for traditional conservatives, because traditional conservatives want both free speech, but they also want the government to get their hands off corporate governance. So here, in order to get free speech, we have to hold private corporations in some way accountable. But I think liberals and conservatives probably should agree that if you're going to censor, you can't get the advantage of Section 230 of the Communication and Decency Act, because that gives special exemptions only to platforms that don't censor. And when it was initially passed, the big three platforms didn't censor. And so they got the benefit of Section 230. But now that they are censoring, I don't think they should any longer be exempt from what other media are not exempt from. The radio station that runs this broadcast, they can be sued for what I say, what you say on the show. Why should Facebook, why should Twitter, why should YouTube have a special exemption if they're picking and choosing what to have on that platform?
So who governs the criteria for censorship that these private agencies and companies are using? Is it relativism, or is there an overarching governing thing?
Well, that's a big debate today, and I address that in my book, The New Censors, because Facebook has just appointed a Supreme Court of censorship consisting of 20 or 25, many of them my former colleagues and people I know well, academics, who will decide what goes on Facebook and what doesn't
right.
go on Facebook. And, you know, people might say that's better than just leaving it up to Mark Zuckerberg himself. But the idea of platonic guardians, 20 or 25 people, deciding what we can debate and what we can't debate, it's just not the American way. And so I'm not in favor of these ways of trying to legitimate censorship. My preference is let everything, as long as it's legal. No, I don't mean we should have child pornography or how to make a nuclear bomb or incitement to killing people. No, that can be taken down by anybody. It should be taken down. It's against the law. But if it's not unlawful, I just don't think you have these platforms having either individual human beings or algorithms deciding what can be and what can't be heard by the general public.
Attorney Alan Dershowitz is my guest, and we're talking about the attack on our freedom of speech. This whole cancel culture, can you talk about that a bit?
Sure.
And how do we best handle this attack on our own freedom of speech?
I think you're absolutely right. It is our own freedom of speech. For example, in New York, which is home to tens of thousands more Italian-Americans, many of whom are justly proud of the role of Columbus discovering the New World, many of them are furious at the fact that New York wants to cancel Columbus Day. People want to take down statues of Thomas Jefferson. Over the weekend, I just happened to be rereading the Lincoln-Douglas debates because I was asking myself the question, would YouTube have allowed the Lincoln-Douglas debates to go on the air? Because Douglas was advocating continued slavery in some parts of the country. And Lincoln himself was saying that, yeah, we should free the slaves and send them to Liberia. He was, in some respects, a white supremacist. And there are those who want to cancel him, forgetting that every human being in the world is flawed. Nobody is perfect. If we start canceling anybody who has any imperfections in their life, we're going to have a very, very boring world. So I'm strongly against cancel culture, and that's why I wrote my earlier book on cancel culture and the implications of, if we allow this to go forward, cancel culture will become American culture, and we'll be a poorer country for it.
And it'll all be relative, and everybody will be canceling each other's culture.
Well, today it's the left, the hard left, the woke left that's canceling. But tomorrow it could be, remember, McCarthyism was brought by the right. You can't have free speech for me, but not for thee. If you deny free speech, if you cancel anybody, you're going to end up canceling everybody. Look, Martin Luther King has had problems that we know about now in his life. Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi. There are no perfect people. And the idea that you start canceling people years after their death because of their imperfections is just so dangerous.
It's ludicrous and dangerous. The case against the new censorship, protecting free speech from big tech, progressives, and universities. Attorney Alan Dershowitz's book, and also Cancel Culture, is another book he has written. How can people get copies of either of these or other of your
books? Oh, it's easy. Just press a button on Amazon. It'll be
there. You go. Your name will be right there.
You can get it on Kindle. It's, in fact, both of them have been bestsellers on Kindle in various categories. So I hope people will read them. And more important, I hope they'll act on them and fight back against this attempt to treat us as children and infantilize us and say we have to tell you what you can read and what you can see. You're not smart enough to decide for yourself. We have to fight back against that.
Well, Attorney Dershowitz, I was going to ask you, that is my last question. Actually, I have two questions. What do you see coming down the pike, and how can we fight this?
Well, we can fight by changing Section 230. We can fight by listening to talk shows like yours and podcasts, and finding alternative ways of expressing ourselves, having alternatives to the three giant tech medias, which are now engaged in censorship. There are lots of things we can do to fight back, and we have to do that to preserve our own liberty. As Learned Hand once said, if liberty dies in the hearts of men and women, nothing can be done through the courts or through legislatures. So we have to keep the spirit of liberty alive. And I think we are a country that loves liberty. We were founded on liberty. And let's keep fighting for it.
Alan Dershowitz has been my guest. The case against the new censorship, protecting free speech from big techs, progressives, and universities is one of his books we talked about. And Cancel Culture. Where do you stand, and are you willing to stand up for what you believe in and what the Constitution gives us the rights to believe in? I'm Jeannie Bredlich. Alan, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you all for tuning in to Encounter.